Tonight we're gonna move away from a discussion of biblical authority as it relates to what we do as a part of the church. You know, a lot of times we talk about biblical authority, but we always talk about it in terms of what we do as a corporate body. In other words, what we do as a church. And sometimes we talk about what we do as individuals, but we usually talk about that, and we've already talked about that, as a distinction between the individual and the collective. The reason that I want to talk about sexual conduct, well, there are two reasons I want to talk about sexual conduct. And the first is that sexual conduct is something that we all engage in, or most of us engage in, and it is something that God wants us to engage in, and he gave us instructions about how to do that. But this is private activity. And I included this part of the discussion so that we'll recognize that God cares about the things that we do in our private lives as much as he cares about the things that we do in a corporate way. And it's unreasonable to say that God expresses his desire, his instruction to us, only in terms of the corporate things that we do. So we've got a model that we've used, and that model that we've sort of laid out is that anytime we talk about any kind of establishing biblical authority, that what we're going to do is first we're going to look at explicit commands and examples and facts. So we're going to look at the commandments and the facts that surround sexual conduct. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking at some precedent-setting examples. Then we're going to try, if we can, this is the way our model works, we're going to look at the underlying principles. If we can find those underlying principles, then we'll be able to better understand the information that we have. And sometimes we can look at Old Testament patterns. And so that's the model that we're going to use as we try to establish biblical authority for individual action tonight. So let's talk about the commands and the facts that we can see that relate to our sexual activity. And I know this is a little hard for me to talk about. It's a little hard for us all to talk about because it's a private matter. And so we're a little reluctant to talk about some of these things, but we have to. We need to be able to be comfortable at least considering these things for ourselves and using this kind of model in order to try to understand what the biblical information is. So we'll talk about the commands and the facts that we can find. Who would like to read Matthew 5, and that should be colon, verses 27 and 28, not Matthew 527, verse 28. Matthew 5, verses 27 and 28.
I'll read that, Dean.
Okay.
You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart.
Okay. This is in the context of the Sermon on the Mount, passage that we're real familiar with. Most of us have read the Sermon on the Mount many, many times. And what Jesus is saying is that the Pharisees, even though they tell you some things about biblical authority, have not told you the truth about biblical authority. They've not explained to you what the real will of God is. So here in Matthew 5, he says, don't, number one, commit adultery. That would be having sexual relations with someone who is married that is not your spouse. Or if you were married, having sexual relationship again with somebody that's not your spouse. That's the concept of adultery. And he says, it's more than that. He says, don't look on a woman to lust after her. Now that's the King James translation. So avoid lust. And by extension, I think the implication is that we ought to avoid those things that tend to excite lust. And so in that vein, I think Jesus is telling us, avoid things like pornography. You're not committing an adulterous act. You are not committing fornication, but you are encouraging lustful looking. And so Jesus, of course, warns us about those kinds of things. Someone want to read Matthew 19, verse 9? And there's you really need to read a much longer context around these passages in order to fully understand all of the facts and the information that's here. But for the sake of time, we'll just read verse 9, Matthew 19.
Go ahead.
And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another commits adultery.
Okay. So don't divorce your wife. And if we were to look further at some of the information, we would see more about the whole issue of divorce. But this will suffice it to say, if you marry a woman or if you marry a man, you stay married. Acts 21, verse 25.
But concerning the Gentiles who have believed, we wrote, having decided that they should abstain from meat sacrificed to idols and from blood and from what is strangled and from fornication.
Okay. So this is in the aftermath of a discussion about circumcision. There was a question that arose about circumcision. Some people were saying that the apostles back in Jerusalem had sent them out to teach that you ought to be circumcised. So the apostle Paul said, that's not what I know. So we're going to have to go back to Jerusalem and ask the apostles if they really sent you out to teach this. They did. They had the conference in Acts, the 15th chapter. This is in the aftermath of that. These are the instructions that they gave as a part of the conclusions that they came to during that conference that the apostles had in Jerusalem with the church there. And it turns out that these people that were going around saying, you should be circumcised, you must be circumcised, they were wrong. They were lying. But the apostles did say that there are still some things that are important that you need to consider. And these are the things that they felt were important to stress in that culture. The Roman culture was a highly sexualized culture. I don't know if you've ever done any reading about Rome, but fornication and adultery were commonplace in Rome. So was prostitution. And in fact, as we've done excavations in Pompeii, it turns out that Pompeii may have been kind of like the Las Vegas of that day. There were bordellos, there were houses of prostitution, and it wasn't just prostitution with somebody of the opposite sex. It was prostitution with the same sex. So all of these things they had to address, and they had to think about these things. And these were, again, let me remind you, these are private activities. This is not something that has to do with what the church is doing. God expresses authority in terms of private activity as much as he does in terms of corporate activity. 1 Thessalonians 4, who would like to read that? Verses 3 and 5.
I have that. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passion like Gentiles who do not know God.
Okay. So this is each of us is responsible before God for keeping these commandments. And I always, when I talk about sexual purity, I always try to talk about Hebrews 13 at verse 4. Who would like to read that?
I can read it.
Okay.
Marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral.
Okay. I like some of the implications that are in the King James translation of Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is honorable. There's nothing dirty about the relationship that a man and a woman enjoy, and it was given them by God. They ought to be able to enjoy that relationship. And I've never talked about the Song of Solomon in a Bible discussion. I've never talked about the Song of Solomon in a sermon, but I am convinced that, and that's because I don't really understand that book. I struggle to try to understand it. The one thing that I do think that I understand is that there is a purity of sexual relationship that God smiles upon. And that's a part of God's planning for the human race. And we should never think that there's something unholy or unclean about the sexual relationship when it's enjoyed within the boundaries that God gave us for it. So, any questions about commands and facts?
Hey, Dean, I was reading in Colossians, and when you were just talking about there about the people there in Rome, in Colossians 3:7, it says, in which he also sometimes walked when you lived in them. The person that was making some commentary had said that even the moralist sanction every kind of unchastity except for that of your wife. So it was, it sounds like there was a lot of stuff going on there that was sure not right, but there was very few people who would stand up for the truth.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I think there's an important lesson for us there, and it's one of the facts. People were involved in sexual impurity before they came to know God. And there is this concept that people sometimes talk about. They call it secondary virginity. So, yes, I used to be promiscuous. I came to know God, And now, as a chaste virgin, I want to present myself to my husband. And there's something to be said for that. We are a new creature, and many times we've made a mess out of our lives prior to becoming a Christian. But once we become a Christian, we're not saddled with the things that we did before. Now, there may be consequences that we bear. I mean, you may have contracted a venereal disease. It may be that you have borne children as a result of an impure sexual relationship. But still, there's a way to think about this that I think is really, really wholesome, to think about secondary virginity. But Richard makes a very good point that it was so common then that about the only thing that they frowned upon was for a married woman to have a relationship with someone other than her husband. It was okay for the husband to do it.
Yeah.
And it was almost sanctioned, condoned. And yes, people then condoned a lot of stuff. I mean, I can't imagine what went on in Corinth when you had the man that had his father's wife. That just strikes me as beyond the pale. But nevertheless, those were the kinds of things that characterized their culture. And creating a culture that's based on biblical authority, not saying, well, this is bound to be okay because everybody does it. This is bound to be okay because I can't control myself. This is bound to be okay because this is a God-given desire, is to miss the point that God also set up certain boundaries. Good comment, Richard. Anything else? Okay, let's go to our next step in our model. And the next step would be, let's look for some precedent-setting examples, if we can find them. We can't always find the examples, but sometimes we can. Who would like to read 1 Corinthians 5, verses 1 through 3?
I can read it.
Okay.
It is actually reported that there is immorality among you, and immorality of such a kind as does not exist even among the Gentiles, that someone has his father's wife. You have become arrogant and have not mourned instead, so that the one who had done this deed would be removed from your midst. For I, on my part, though absent in body, but present in spirit, have already judged him who has so committed this.
Okay.
As though I were present.
Okay. Thank you, Eileen. And, you know, this is a clear expression from God that I have certain limits within which you can enjoy the wonderful blessings of intimacy. But you cannot go beyond those limits. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 5, verses 9 through 11.
I'll read that. I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world, or with the covetous and swindlers, or with idolaters, for then you would have to go out of the world. But actually, I wrote to you not to associate with any so-called brother if he should be an immoral person, or covetous, or an idolater, or a reviler, or a drunkard, or a swindler, not even to eat with such as a one.
And I think in this passage, these precedent-setting examples serve to do two things. They remind us that God views all sin in the same way. You know, I was talking with Kim. We were just thinking about a book that we had just recently purchased at an estate sale. It's a book that talks about Norman Rockwell's paintings. I don't know if you're familiar with Norman Rockwell's illustrations, but one of his really famous illustrations is some little boys that are running past a sign that says no swimming, and they're carrying their clothes and they're buck naked. And Kim said, I've often wondered what was chasing those boys at this moment that made them run like that. But we talked about that a little bit. And, you know, there are some things that we kind of dismiss unwillingly, I think, or unwittingly, I think. But we do tend to dismiss those things, and we engage in them. And we say, well, that's just little boys. And these are the little boys. They look like they're 7 or 8, wouldn't you say, Kim? Something like that.
Yeah, our preteens, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we say, well, that's just boys being boys. And I tend to dismiss things that seem unimportant to me in my mind. I don't always pay attention to crossing at the crosswalk when I'm crossing the street. Kim gets on me all the time because I'll cross in the middle of the block. I don't walk to the corner, and I don't always pay attention to the walk, don't walk sign. And there are a lot of things that I do that I dismiss as being unimportant. And that should never happen. These examples, and especially when the apostle takes a certain kind of activity that we would say, oh, that's awful, that's horrible. Look at this guy who has his father's wife. He says, that's no different than somebody who's covetous. And remember that covetousness is just like sexual immorality. It's not whether you do something to swindle somebody. It's whether you're prepared to do it. Whether you mull in your brain how you could swindle somebody. Any other comments about precedent-setting examples that you can think of? And these are just some that I thought of. Of course, we think about David and how much trouble David created for himself because he wanted to have a relationship with Bathsheba. We think about the extent to which there is an example of people in the first century who said, I will not marry because if I married, I would be concerned about the things of my wife. And this is a dangerous, dangerous time. And I don't want to give the tyrants that are among us a hook that they could use to try to drag me away from God. I won't give them the ability to take my wife and then say to me, if you don't renounce your faith, I'm going to kill your wife. I cannot imagine the conflict that would go on in a man who was in that position. Or someone like the Apostle Paul who said, hey, I travel all over the world. I constantly put myself in danger. I am constantly in fear of my life. I constantly have to rely on the largesse of others to help to support me, even when I can support myself. Sometimes other people help to support me. And the Apostle Paul was in an unusual and unique circumstance. If I were, say, going to be a preacher and go to someplace like Saudi Arabia for the purpose of taking the gospel there, I would be extremely worried about taking my wife. That doesn't mean that I can't marry. It just means that I have to be aware of the present circumstances that I'm in. Now, and today, the circumstances are not as worse, not as bad as they were in the time of the Apostle Paul. And in some cases, they're worse. You know, my son-in-law comes from Colombia. And he has always wanted to take Jenny back to Colombia to visit his family. It was a very difficult decision for him because Colombia is in some ways a lawless place. And he's going to take a blonde, blue-eyed little girl with him to Colombia, knowing that she is going to face dangers there that she does not face here. Now, eventually, they came to the conclusion that the situation had changed and that the lawlessness in Colombia had subsided, and they were able to go to Colombia. But I know how much Jeff wanted to take Jenny to Colombia and his sons. I mean, he's got a blonde, blue-eyed little boy. And it's as dangerous for him as it is for Jenny. It's dangerous for everybody in the family except for Jeff. Jeff looks like he belongs there. Everybody, well, Dash kind of looks like he belongs there as well, but everybody else, just they're an attractive target. So I understand. In some ways it's better, in some ways it's worse, and we all have to look at the world around us, and we have to make certain decisions based on what we see. And the precedent-setting examples. Sometimes it's a precedent-setting example in a given situation. In another situation, it might not be. Remember, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, "For the present distress, remain even as I am, without a wife. But if you marry, there's nothing wrong with that." So comments about where we are in our model. Are we ready to go on? Okay. Let's see if we can identify some underlying principles. They're not specific commandments. They're not specific facts, but they're just kind of the principles that seem to underlie this behavior. And if we can identify the principles, then that helps us to understand, well, like the Apostle Paul said when he cataloged sin in the end of Romans, he always puts on that phrase, and things that are like that. That's because if you understand the underlying principles, then you can look at something and say, okay, here's the principle. This seems to be like that. So let's look at a couple of passages. Matthew 15, verse 19.
I'll read it. Okay. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander.
Okay. The principle that underlies this is that we act out of what's in our heart. So you can't take things into your heart and not expect that they're going to eventually come out in activity. So guard the heart. That's where a lot of these things, the problems here, emanate. It's where the good things come from as well. But the heart is what's really important. What about 1 Corinthians 6, verses 18 through 20?
Flee immorality. Every other sin that a man commits is outside the body. But the immoral man sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you are not your own? For you have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body.
Okay. Here's another one of those underlying principles. It's the what would Jesus do principle. We belong to God. And that means every part of our being belongs to God. Any other thoughts? Can you identify other underlying principles? I don't mean to say that I've identified them all.
Yeah, but Dean, you know that the passage right there, especially number 19, do you know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you? I think if you really look at that passage and you think about that, a lot of the other stuff that you've been talking about would go away, because you, as a Christian, you realize that your body is not all yours. You're supposed to be a temple. You are supposed to be the example. And when you can put that in your mind, it'll help you address most problems that come into mind. I know I remember Lenny saying that if he ever runs into a situation, he'll say, okay, well, what would God do? If you have all that in your mind, that really helps you make up your decision on what you're doing, not just with what we're talking about here, but with everything.
Okay.
I mean, that passage just really hits home. I wished I would have understood that one something, 60 some years ago. It would have really helped.
It would have helped all of us. And in terms of just the relationship between a man and a woman, 1 Corinthians 7, he says, if you are a married individual, you have to understand you belong to your wife, or you belong to your husband. So if you understand that, then I'm like Richard. I think that goes a long way to preventing us getting involved in a lot of things, but sometimes God has to say, don't do this, or do this. Because just knowing that we belong to somebody else and just recognizing what God has done for us is I get the impression that God knows that I can be really dense. And sometimes he has to just come out and say, hey, Dean, do this. Or, hey, Dean, don't do this. And the Apostle Paul said, would you ever take the members of Christ and join them to a harlot? But he had to say that because sometimes we're a little dense and God has to beat us with a club to get us to really see this.
Dean?
Yeah.
If you go back to sort of what Richard was talking about, you said that the husband belongs to the wife and the wife belongs to the husband. But the verse 19, I think the one that Richard was talking about, is we belong to God. And that's the thing. And this morning you were sort of talking about how can you walk away from love? Well, if you go back to the Garden of Eden, I was listening this morning, the devil put between Adam and Eve, put resentment or jealousy that he knows good from good and evil. But when you stop and think about it, they knew good already. They knew loving at its best. And so all they really learned was this is what's evil. They didn't learn what was good. And so God just keeps putting back in our lives, this is what's good. And like you said, he only tells you what's good. And this is how you replace the evil in your life with good.
Yep. Very good point. Very good point. Other thoughts about these underlying principles? Okay. Now, the final step for us as Christians, of course, we're going to look to Jesus. We're going to look for the things that Jesus said that were a part of the new covenant that he made with us. But looking back at the Old Testament can be instructive because we can see a lot of things don't change. There are some basic principles that we see even in the Old Testament that can serve as a pattern to help us to understand New Testament information. I wouldn't suggest that we start by looking at the Old Testament because that's not the law that we're amenable to. We need to start by looking at the New Testament, but the Old Testament can sometimes give us some help in trying to understand some of the New Testament information. So, that said, let's look at some Old Testament patterns that I think can help us understand the information that we find in the New Testament. Let's look at Exodus 20, verses 1 through 4.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Then God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourselves an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth.
Okay. So here's this Old Testament pattern. And what we're talking about here in Exodus 20 is we're talking about the Ten Commandments, okay? So we can look at the Ten Commandments and some of the precise laws that were given that helped the people of Israel keep these Ten Commandments, knowing what they meant, and all of those things. And that can help us as we try to understand New Testament information. There's the thing, the core information is here in Exodus 20, verses 1 through 4. I am the Lord your God. You have no other God before me. Everything emanates from me. And that's not because God is somehow egotistical and he can't stand any rival. It's because God knows that he is alone in the universe in desiring only good for us. Satan does not do that. God does that. Let's look at 2 Samuel 11, verses 2 through 4. Can I get somebody to read that?
Now, when evening came, David arose from his bed and walked around on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof, he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful in appearance. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" And David sent messages and took her, and when she came to him, he lay with her, and when she had purified herself from her uncleanness, she returned to his house.
Okay. It's a terrible example, but nevertheless, it's there, and there's something for us to learn. When you, in terms of avoiding the thoughts that enter into our heart, David, when he was walking on the roof of his house and saw Bathsheba, should have gone back inside. Instead, he went in and got his binoculars. It's never a good idea. And there's something to be said about Bathsheba, but this habit of bathing on the roof of the house, that's of course what they did then. And there was nothing wrong with that. That's the place where you would bathe. And she just had the unfortunate happenstance that David saw it. David later said, Job said, "I made a covenant with my eyes that I would not look upon wickedness." So part of this Old Testament pattern is make a covenant with your eyes. When you're surfing the web and you're looking for information, sometimes these pornographic sites will disguise themselves and you'll get there without intending to. Shut it down. Turn off your computer if you have to. And these sites are terribly, terribly vexatious because you go on some of these sites and you can't get loose. It's like you can't get away. Yeah, you can. There's a plug on your computer. Unplug the thing. That way you can get away. You're not trapped. Although they're very good at bringing you in. So just be aware of that. I went to a site, I was looking for a way to repair a leather sofa and clean it. So I was searching for cleaning materials for leather. And I got onto this site that was all about bondage and domination, and they had all these leather belts and things that you could use, and I thought, oh no, and I couldn't get away from it. That site plagued me for years, kept sending me information that I didn't want. But just be careful that this information is so endemic to our society that it's a real problem for us. And then the last one that I'd like to look at tonight is Proverbs, the 6th chapter, and let's see, verse 26. I have to remember that when I'm trying to move my image to the right, I have to move my body to the left because that's the way my camera works. Proverbs 6, verse 26. Who would like to read that?
For on account of a harlot, one is reduced to a loaf of bread, and an adulteress hunts for the precious life.
So, be aware. Be aware. Keep yourself pure. And I have taught a class similar to this to high school kids. And there are some people who say, I will never go out on a date with a single girl just by myself. I won't do that. Because I want to avoid temptation. Now, is that the choice that I have made? No. I mean, that I made when I was single and I was dating Kim. Yeah, I went out with Kim. Do I denigrate somebody who makes that choice and says, you know, I will not go out on a date with a single person by myself? I just won't. I don't do that. I date in groups. I heard about somebody who said, until I was married, I never kissed my wife. And Homer Haley said, I didn't either. Before I was married, she wasn't my wife. So I understand the principle, and sometimes we have to be careful with principles. It may be a good idea that you want to put it into your life and incorporate it into your lifestyle. That doesn't mean that everybody has to. Other people can share your conviction that you want to be sexually pure. They don't have to go about it the same way that you do. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. So any comments or thoughts at this point? We're finished with this discussion, or at least my part of the discussion.
Dean?
Yeah.
Just because you said that, I had a friend of mine who spent a year in Spain as an exchange student, and she said that they all dated in groups. All the girls went out, all the boys went out, they'd meet up somewhere and they'd do stuff, but they always went out in groups. You never went out individually.
And I applaud that. I applaud that. That's just being smart. I didn't let my daughters date until they were 35. No. I wanted to make that rule, but I got overruled. Any other comments?
It's a different world today. It seems like that, It's not the same as it was maybe when my mom and dad were young. I don't know how to explain it, but I kind of grew up in it, and I don't remember ever that group thing you were talking about. I don't ever remember. All of my friends had girlfriends, and
Wes, that doesn't mean that all of your friends were doing anything wrong.
But they were, because I knew them.
Well, they may have, but that wasn't related to the fact that they decided to date an individual.
No,
that was what they did.
That's true. That's true.
Now, Wes makes a very good point. We live in a different age. It's different than the way that our parents grew up. In some ways, it's better. In some ways, it's probably a lot worse. I talked to somebody one time who said they wished that they lived in Southern California because you could go out on a date and there was something to do other than go down by the river and drink beer until you couldn't stand up anymore. Because in California, you could go to Disneyland, you could go to the beach, you could go to Knott's Berry Farm, you could go skiing, you could go to ball games. There were a lot of things you could do. And, you know, I'm not picking on people that live in rural areas, but if you live in a rural area, sometimes it's hard for a guy to find something to do to take his girl out on a date other than going out by the river and drinking beer in the back of the pickup truck until you can't see.
Well, those are all factors. I mean, there's so many factors, but I think your point about the underlying principles, and when we're raising our children, I think that's what we make sure that we teach them, is those underlying principles, because all of the circumstances are going to be different in which they find themselves, and different than times that we found ourselves. So I think what's critical is that when we teach this and we think about it for ourselves and applying it to our lives, we have to make determinations for ourselves based on those underlying principles. So I think that's why that's so important.
Right.
Circumstances are going to be different.
Yep. Okay, well, it's time for us to finish up. The one thing, two things I want you to remember. God expects us to be sexually pure. And the second thing is, God has expectations for our private activity as much as he does for our corporate activity. So let's just always remember to seek the biblical information and try to develop a model that you can use. You may not use the same model I do, but develop a model, develop a plan for getting the biblical information.